The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this has been a week of emphasizing the role of imagination in Buddhist practice. And it's not something that I'm making up on my own. That the Buddha himself, in one way or the other, in a variety of ways, used imagination and evoked the imaginary powers of people when they engaged in this practice. And as the practice deepens, there is born a capacity for particular capacity for imagination, which in English we could call maybe vision. And to have a vision of a possibility. And it's a vision that can seem very clear and tangible and immediate. And maybe it even is in a certain kind of way. It's not something which is it physically tangible or physically seen, but with the mind's eye, in Buddhism, awakening is opening the eye of the Dharma, the eye that can see and have a vision of the potential for freedom, or can see freedom, can see the peace and the freedom of the mind that's there to some degree, and then has a vision for it becoming complete, a vision of it expanding, a vision of it touching the places where we're not yet free. And this idea of becoming a visionary, using the imagination to know a possibility that it's not a fantasy, it's based on something real, but it's imagining the fulfillment of that. So for example, if I hold my hand in a tight fist, I could release one finger and hold the other fingers tight. And then, I think, you know, it's possible now. I have a vision. I see the potential of opening the whole hand up and relaxing it. And so it's a kind of an imagination, a vision of a potential. And it's said sometimes in Buddhism that awakening is an act of vision, a seeing, or it awakens vision. It awakens the imagination of something that's possible that then becomes the direction we go or what we kind of wholeheartedly put our life energy into. Like, this is important, this is valuable to live this way. And it doesn't mean we have to leave our world behind, the regular world behind, but rather with a clear enough vision of the potential or what awakening is, this freedom of clinging is, we realize that it can be the foundation for how we live our life, or the all-encompassing container or approach for everything we do. So it isn't so much that we have to leave our life, it's to vision that it's possible to live our life freely and to wholeheartedly enter our life with that as a guiding principle. And this is a radical thing. And so so it's not a compromising our life necessarily, but it's bringing what's best in life, freedom and peace and compassion, as the container, as the context, as the foundation. So a vision that's possible, and then a decision, even a commitment, a vow, this is how I want to live my life. So all these things I've been talking about this week have to do with imagination, and imagination can be both harmful, can be debilitating, and it could be forward-leading, opening. It can help us grow and develop. And to be able to see those two apart is very important. A few things about the word that the Buddha used, words he used that I'm translating as imagination. One of them is manyati, and that is usually used for acts of imagination which are not helpful. In fact, Bhikkhu Bodhi, the great translator, sometimes translates this word as misconceive. There's no negative prefix in the word, but it's used in such a kind of negative way in the suttas that it's often, you know, can be to misimagine or bad, poor imagination. And so a jackal, the Buddha used the word for a jackal that imagines itself to be a lion. And so, you know, it's a misconceives oneself as a lion. So one of the very interesting places where this word one imagines, where it has negative connotations, is manyati. It has to do with identification. And there's plenty of places in the suttas where Buddha emphatically talks about the problems people have when they imagine and they imagine an identity for themselves that they are something in relationship to other things. So imagining that they are the same as the universe or the same as the world, imagining that they are in the world, imagining the world is in them, imagining that they are distinct from the world. And he uses this word manyati, imagine. And if you understand that, and it is often translated as conceive, which has some idea, doesn't quite capture the idea of imagination. And so rather than talking about the self and identity, that who I am, I'm this, I'm that, as a belief, which gets into philosophy and all that, the Buddha is using the word imagine. And so it's not a philosophical issue, but it's an issue of what we're doing with our imagination. What are we constructing? What are we fantasizing about? And many of the problems around self are not about truly exactly what we are as a self, whatever that is, but rather how we imagine ourselves to be. And then we have a whole different understanding of this kind of not self teaching. There's for example, there's a very common phrase, important to me, myself, and mine, that's used in the suttas. It's a little bit of mistranslation, the order of it, but basically the same. And imagining that something is mine, imagining that I have an identity, imagining there is an essential self. The Buddha uses the word imagine. It doesn't say one believes in me, myself, and mine, but one is something that we're construing, we're constructing, we're imagining happening. And so part of meditation practice then is to quiet and calm this excessive over-imagination, false imagination, misconstruing we do. And it's not questioning or challenging any kind of philosophical view of self, me, myself, and mine, in these particular teachings. And so we don't have to get involved philosophically, is there not a self? Where we get involved in meditation practice is to clarify, let go of, quiet the imaginings that are operating. And so that's kind of manyati, this imagining is usually negative. The word that's more positive for imagination is has the word anupassati in it. And that's one of the central words for mindfulness practice. It means in mindfulness practice to observe, to see. And it has the prefix sam in front of it, so sam anupassati. And the context in which it's used in the Buddha we can understand it to be imagination of maybe of the form of visualization. So the similes of the hindrances I talked about a few days ago, to the Buddha says visualizing oneself as no longer sick, visualizing oneself as no longer in debt, visualizing self when no longer enslaved. And so that visualizing has a kind of richer feeling sometimes than imagination. And it touches into something deeper. It touches into something more emotional, more embodied, more tangible maybe in the mind's eye. It kind of helps us to fill out something. And that is, I think, one of the functions of two functions of this imagination or visualization the Buddha talks about, uses in practice. One is to give us a visceral, kind of embodied maybe, feeling or sense of what he's talking about. That's not just explanations. It's, you know, more like poetry or something that's evocative. And something that opens up and touches into more dimensions of our life than just words. It touches into our emotional being, our kinesthetic being. Some of the imagery are in action and movement, flowing water, and the person working the lathe or kneading the water into the powder. And also it's touches into memory and associations we have with these things, and our capacity for imagination, our capacity for thought and thinking. And so we have here this movement support in imagination, this movement of becoming unified, which means gathering together all our different functions as human being so that we're focused and present here for the practice of meditation. We're not fragmented, we're not divided, and we're not leaving any part of ourselves out, rather gathering together all of ourselves to center and be here. And that we'll see, we'll continue now with the steps of Anapanasati on Monday, going on with steps 7 and 8. And this continues this process of gathering together and settling and unifying. And we're supporting also the process of also, once the imagination has functioned in a useful way, to help that to settle as well, not to hold on to that, but to go to deeper states of unification and calm, that at some point the imagination is no longer supportive for. So we'll start going into more deeply into the mind next week, and then we will go on from there. And so thank you very, very much. And someone asked yesterday, I saw in the chat at the end, that they wanted to see the written form of the similes for the four jhanas. And I said I would do it, and I still will do it at some point. And also, I can also maybe post my translation of this 16 steps that we're going through. And once I've posted it, I'll let you know where it is. And hopefully I'll have time to do it over the weekend. So thank you all very much, and look forward to our next time together.